Hello, friends. Today on the podcast, we're talking with yoga instructor and Greenwell NYC founder, Amanda Greenwell. Hi, welcome to Happy Healthy Human Radio. I'm your host, Samantha Attard, coming at you from the beautiful Washington, D.C. I'm an Ayurvedic coach, yoga instructor, and doula, sharing with you all the things I am learning about and teaching about in my everyday life so we can all find just a little more balance, bliss, and confidence. I so appreciate you being a part of this community. And if you enjoy this podcast, please do subscribe. You can also rate us and leave a review over on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us get in front of more people. But the most direct way for you to help us get in front of more people is to just tell a friend about this podcast. And if you enjoy it, probably your friend would enjoy it too. So be brave, let them know about it, and we'd really, really, really appreciate it. Today, we are talking with the darling, amazing, fabulous Amanda Greenwell. Amanda and I met just over 2 years ago. We went on a teacher training in India for Ayurveda and kind of kept up a little bit in the days since and learned a few months ago about this new project, this new thing that she's creating called Greenwell NYC. And Greenwell NYC is all about creating diverse connections and providing free, accessible resources for those wanting to enhance quality of life through health and all-around balanced well-being, and basically helping people and also helping other people help people. So it's really bringing together a lot of professionals in the health and wellness space in New York City, but ultimately a little bit beyond as well. There's also an amazing book club that's going to be starting soon. And we had an amazing conversation, yes, about Greenwell and the work that Amanda is doing and why she's so passionate about this topic. But we also got into some really interesting and powerful information around using malas and mantras in your meditation practice, about yoga and being a yoga teacher, and what does that mean, and when is it hard, and when is it easy, and just kind of breaking into the industry and all the pieces that come in with that. So it was a really powerful and lovely conversation. I know you're going to love Amanda as much as I do, and I'm really grateful that she shared some time with us today. So please do enjoy this conversation with Amanda Greenwell of Greenwell NYC.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Amanda. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, very lovely. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's so great to have you here. And I'll mention it in the intro and everything, but you know, we first met on retreat in India. Well, actually, it was a teacher training, but kind of felt retreat-y as well. But it was a teacher training with Ayurveda in India. And, you know, like, we're all together for a week, and it's, like, so awesome. And then we, you know, scatter off into our own little worlds. But then, you know, I still occasionally see you, like, pop up on Instagram and things. And then a couple months ago, you posted, I think it was, like, this photo of your mala beads. And I saw this photo. What's she doing? Like, this looks like, first off, it was just a beautiful little stunning photo. And then I was like, is she selling malas? Like, what is this like project that she has going on? And so then I started Instagram stalking you and then reached out and was like, what are you doing? Because it looks beautiful and wonderful and fabulous. And so then I'm just so glad, because it turns out that you are doing beautiful, fabulous, and wonderful things. And so I was like, oh, how lovely.
Yeah, definitely. The malas have been my anchor through this whole journey. So I'm glad that's what stuck out to you. That's something I'm very passionate about in my daily yoga practice. But the whole journey in Ayurveda and India, sorry, that was so amazing. And it's funny, speaking to what you were just saying, like, we went there, we spent a week together, maybe a little more than a week, and then we kind of part ways and we stay connected kind of over social media, which is the great thing about social media, but we don't really keep those connections. So it was great to hear from you and to be brought back to the training and everything that I had learned, especially in this time when I'm starting my new venture, Greenwell NYC. Hello.
fabulous that training was and how fabulous that time was. I would love, I want to get into Greenwell, but you just mentioned that malas are super important to you and that it's a really big part of your practice. And so I would love to hear a little more about that, like how you got into malas and what is it, how do you incorporate it into your day? Because I think it's one of those that can feel, it's one of those aspects of yoga that can feel really foreign and hard to incorporate if you're not really introduced to it.
Yeah, I did my teacher training at Laughing Lotus in New York City, and that was actually a part of the curriculum. The funny thing is, yeah, it is. They
Damn,
teach you.
I knew I wish I went. That's so great.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the funny thing is, I actually bought my first mala beads like 5 years prior to that, and I didn't know how to use them. I had them for 5 years, and I don't know why. I just kept them. I kept them on me. I had them hanging in the dashboard of my car for a little bit. Like I lose everything for I'm just like I can't keep I lose sunglasses, I lose jewelry. I'm not good at keeping things safe, but these beads stuck with me and for some reason I was like I had this attachment to them. I know we're not supposed to have attachments, but I was attached to these beads and then I've always been into kind of like spiritual things like rocks and crystals, so that could have been it too. Like they were made out of moonstone and jade, and who doesn't like sparkly things?
Yeah, for sure. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. And so then do you, because definitely when we were in India and through the training that I've had, I didn't do the 200 hour with Laughing Lotus, but you know, doing the modules for the 300 or for the 500 hour training with them, you know, we talk about using a specific mantra that you use for all of the beads and going around and doing that basically every day. I found I did that for a while, and then for a while I just kind of kept them on me, and I found that I just would like kind of play with them in moments when I was kind of losing my cool a little bit, or like needed to focus, or needed to kind of be more present. But how do you use them in your current practice in life? Is it more their presence in your life, or do you actually meditate or use mantra with them?
I do. I use them. That is the one tool I use mantra to help me meditate. I have a crazy scattered mind, and it really does help me like focus on the one thing that I'm doing. I'm all about manifesting things. So, aside from the meditation part, I think they're a really good tool for like kind of bringing what you want into your life. If you're repeating something twice a day, 108 times, each time you're doing it, then you know that's going to be something that's on your mind constantly. So I have a pretty strict practice with the mala beads, and I think I actually gravitated towards that because some of the other aspects of yoga were really foreign and new to me, but this was kind of easy, you know, like you say a mantra a few times, and like maybe at first you don't really know what you're doing, you don't believe it, but over time it becomes habit, and then over time you like kind of like dive deeper into your words and your feelings around it and kind of like hyper focus on your intention. And that's why I've kept it close to me for so long. So
And I'm curious. Go right
I
ahead.
was gonna say, so that is, I do have a strong daily practice, not just keeping them on me, but using them for mantra.
That is super beautiful. And just one like side question, just out of curiosity. I'm curious if you grew up in like a Catholic tradition or anything that actually had like a rosary. Though I definitely don't practice Catholicism or Christianity anymore, but you know, when I saw the mala beads, I was like, oh, that looks just like a rosary. Oh, that's interesting. Like, and it kind of there was a little bit of like, oh, I see you in that. And I'm curious if that was true at all for you.
Yes, I grew up Catholic, so I went to Catholic
Yeah.
school. Yeah, I went to Catholic private school from kindergarten until 12th grade, and well, I went to church twice a week. And yeah, it probably was that familiar, like being familiar with the rosary and like seeing that. I mean, like okay, like a lot of things were scary to me at the time because being introduced to something so unknown, but that felt safe, like resorting to that. So that's just something that kind of stuck with me. And it's funny because even my family will see it and they're kind of, you know, they're learning about yoga and everything, but they're like, oh, that's like a rosary. And I'm like, yeah.
Well, and you know what? It's another thing. Like, one of the things I really love, because I really love to dip into all different religious traditions. I think they all have so much to share. And I love it when there's like conservation, like kind of when like you realize that the chakras show up in some ways in the Christian sacraments, in Kabbalah, in Sufi mysticism, like stuff like that. I get like a little comfort of like, oh, wait, so if you know, Christianity came up with this rosary thing and Hinduism had this mala thing, like there's something to this, right?
Right.
Like there is a power in it, because that's why so many different traditions came up with this idea, potentially independently, or it was sticky enough to spread. And I think that to me, I always find those to be like, oh, that's a really good tool because everyone's using it,
Right.
like,
Especially if it was brought up independently, like how amazing that so many different
Yeah.
religions across the globe and humanity, places that have never like seen each other before, are doing the same thing and using the same tools for,
It's amazing. Yeah. And I know it can be a very personal thing, and just definitely depends. I'm curious if you use do you use Sanskrit mantras? Do you use just an English word? Like, 'cause kind of with my clients, I kind of introduce it as, hey, like you could just say like peace again and again to yourself, or you could just say love or joy, or you know, a word like that. Or if it's applicable, say, oh, well, actually, you know, you're talking about abundance and connecting with your feminine nature, and actually there's this great mantra for Lakshmi that you might really love. Like, so it kind of like tailor it depending on who I'm talking with, but I'm curious how you go about it, since you've had such a strong practice for many
Yeah,
years.
I do Sanskrit, and the reason, actually, aside from it being how I learned to do it at Laughing Lotus, I read this book called Healing Mantras, and that was actually a part of the
Oh.
curriculum. Have you read it?
No, I have
It's
not.
Using Sound Affirmations for Personal Power, Creativity, and Healing. And it kind
Are you like reading
yeah,
the cover of the book right there?
I'm reading the spine of it for your reference.
That's so funny. No, that's so perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. In reading that, it kind of explained that the sounds in Sanskrit
Yes.
and how they spoke to the universe, and each different, sound that you make or syllable. I'm not too familiar with it, but it actually has a meaning, and it's calling out something specific to
Yes.
the universe. So that's the reason I stick with Sanskrit. But I tell my friends and family that anything, if you say anything 216 times a day, they can't be bad, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. And that is so beautiful and agreed, in terms of I think that's one of my favorite things about Sanskrit, like this connection with the sound that we're making, like Virabhadrasana, like that is supposed to invoke warrior qualities just by saying Virabhadrasana versus warrior. And so I think that's such an amazing piece of Sanskrit. So I like totally hear you. So healing mantras, that book, so they have like they explain a bunch of different mantras that you could choose from for particular reasons and how to pronounce it and all of
They
that.
do.
Awesome.
Pronunciation, I use YouTube, but
Yeah.
they write it out, and they have all the, like, whatever you could be going through, they have a solution or a mantra that you can use to help get you through it.
Amazing. Okay, so I'm gonna just keep asking you questions about mantras, if this is okay. I'm
Yeah.
almost there. Do you stick with the same mantra for a long time, or do you choose like a different one every day, depending on what you feel like you need? How do you go about it?
I do the 40-day practice, and
Yeah.
I usually what that means for me is that I'm doing it for like 2 or 3 months, because if
Got
you miss a day, then you start over. And
it.
I don't really do it to be like super strict with myself. More so, sometimes I think that I almost purposely miss a day because I want to keep going. Like this mantra has resonated with me. Like, I'm gonna keep using it. So, yeah, it really depends on how I'm feeling. When I pick it,
That
I
is
really pick it for a reason. Like, I have an intention, so I try to stick with it as long as I can. And then once I actually stop, because I feel like whatever I'm wanting or however I'm feeling has happened and like healed or settled for me, then I might move on to something else.
Yeah, I love this so much, and I mean, combining that way of setting the intention with a book like Healing Mantras, where you can actually choose it, it can help it become a self-sustaining practice. Like if I think about, why my mantra and mala practice kind of fell to the wayside, I think it was because I just had that little packet from our Ayurveda training. I was like, well, I'm doing this one. And, and you're like, well, this resonated a lot, February 2017, but it might not resonate the same way anymore. Every time I would go back to the, like, I remember us picking some mantra. I don't think we were specifically using malas. Maybe we were actually, but back in my teacher training, like 2014, and I'm like, well, that's the one I know, so that's the one I'm gonna keep using. And so I love like the way that you're able to self-sustain without it being overwhelming, and I love that 40 days or 2 to 3 months, and if you're like, I'm getting really bored with this mantra, it's like, well, that doesn't mean you have to stop doing mantras. It just means you probably need a new mantra.
Right.
And I think it's easy to say, oh, I'm bored with this practice, or maybe I'm speaking for myself. It's easier for me to say, oh, I'm just bored with this practice, and saying, oh, I guess I just don't need this practice anymore. But actually, maybe there's ways to change within the practice, rather than throwing it all out.
Right. Yeah.
Dang. Good. I was actually literally pulling out because I'm just unpacking my house. We moved just a couple weeks ago, and I was literally unpacking my malas like right before our conversation, which is so funny.
Oh.
So I'm like, oh, great. I'm gonna get to pull them out.
Inspiration.
Yeah, I know it is. Oh my gosh. Thank you for sharing that, because that is so huge and so wonderful. And
Thank you.
I'm thinking about this again today, just of how lucky we are to have done training and work with Laughing Lotus, because they bring in so many of these elements of yoga that are not shared at every studio. I mean, there's such a richness in pranayama, in mantra, in mala, in Ayurveda, in chakras, in bhakti and chanting. Like, that is not the norm everywhere. And so I just was thinking about that today, and this is another reminder of that richness that I just feel very, very grateful
I
for.
know, me too. It's amazing. And actually, I didn't know it wasn't the norm because I didn't know what the norm was.
Yeah.
It was my only experience until I started, like reaching out and going to other places and like learning from their teachers and like kind of like seeing what they knew or what they talked about. I was like, wow, I'm very grateful to have gone to Laughing Lotus.
Yeah, it is a really fascinating one. So you did your teacher training there, and you were saying before the call that you did a little bit of teaching and that you were interested in really doing a lot more kind of private yoga work. Can you tell me a little more about like even that decision of like, oh, private yoga might be for me, and just how it kind of fit and what you were doing?
Yeah, so I was actually had a full-time job. I still do. I work at an investment bank, and I really, really did a yoga training because I wanted to make the switch to from full-time, like corporate business worker to yoga teacher. And that's a pretty big switch. So I went through the training and, just trying to figure out how to make it work and, jump from one extreme to the other. And aside from it being kind of like scary and unknown, I was like, okay, it also needs to be practical because I've been doing what I do in the business world for quite some time. And, just because I have this newfound love for yoga doesn't necessarily mean that I need to give it up. I was trying to find a way to, incorporate the two of them. So I was thinking, okay, well, I teach yoga, I have certification, I went to India, studied Ayurveda, and I'm very passionate about it. I feel balanced even though I work in high stress workplace. And then I was like, oh wait, I work in a high stress workplace. Like, it would be perfect if, I tried some outreach to the people I'm working with to do private lessons, because then I would be teaching, which is what I wanted to do. And, maybe eventually after having a few private lessons, I could, kind of completely switch or, at some point just do lessons and turn that into a career. I did want to do the classes, but with the scheduling, it's, as you might know, it's pretty competitive to get some really good teaching classes, and that's not something that they tell you when you sign up for yoga teacher training, that hey, you're going to learn a lot of great stuff, but it's going to be really, really hard for you to get a job teaching because there's a lot of yoga teachers, and You know, you might have to like host your own private, not private classes. You host your own like free classes, or maybe do yoga in the park for free. It's a lot of work, and that's not a bad thing, but it's challenging to manage, especially if you have a full-time job.
Yes, totally.
So I kind of dropped back from that a little bit, especially after the India trip. I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna make this work. I was feeling really upset because I never actually began teaching. I did a few private classes with like friends of friends, you know, just to try to like keep it in my system and like
Yes.
practice teaching, because I wanted to be a really great teacher. I wanted to help people. And eventually it just kind of fizzled out.
Yeah.
It was really hard to
It's hard
sustain.
to make time for.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and you go from this like you feel really good when you're doing it, but then like I would feel bad because I would be neglecting it because of my other job that's paying me to be there. And then I was like, I'm neglecting my yoga, or vice versa. So I kind of stopped
Right.
for a little bit, which actually is what inspired Greenwell NYC. And
Cool. Yeah, so yeah, tell me about it. And I mean, you have a beautiful vision, and I would love to hear a little more and continue that bridge to like how does that relate to the time spent teaching and trying to teach to now and yeah, and how you can see it growing, knowing that you already had this kind of attempt at, oh, maybe I can leave corporate world, but like then realizing like, oh wait, that's not feasible at this moment. So I'd be curious to hear kind of a little bit of that, like past, present, and future.
Yeah. So I always go through these like moments where I'm like, oh, I miss everyone from yoga school. I miss the yoga community. Like I go on social media and I'll like stalk everyone and kind of see what they're doing and be a little bit jealous, or like want to reach out to them or go to one of their classes and just stay involved in the community, even though I wasn't actively teaching at the moment. And I had a lot of friends from teacher training who like went off and had to try to start companies and did all these things. And I thought like, oh, like it's pretty challenging for them too. Like that's a thing, it's hard. It's a lot of work. And I thought like, oh, maybe I'll have a get together with all the people that I went to training with. And each time, like one of them can like showcase what they do and like bring awareness to each other. And then I was like, okay, why don't I just like do that, but bring awareness to what they do, but invite outside people? Because, us inside, like people who do yoga already know about it.
The five yoga teachers like come to my yoga class, come to my yoga class. It's hard. I was thinking about that just the other time moment because I was like, oh, I kind of need some more reviews for my Facebook page. And I was thinking of it's like, oh well, this girl's a really great student and I love this person. Like they're a great student. And I'm like, oh my God, they're all also yoga teachers. And so I would just like it's kind of a funny like, here, you give me a review and I'll give you a review.
Right.
And
It feels very
so
transactional in some ways. So I was like, okay, the reason people become yoga teachers is because typically they want to help other people. So we need to get people in here learning about these teachers, learning about how they're helping and what they can do for you. And so that is what inspired Greenwell NYC. Basically, it's a place where people can come for free to our events, and basically we're helping people who help people. So each event we showcase, or like we'll have a discussion or a workshop or something related to what the entrepreneur, professional, or it could really be anything, whether you're a yoga teacher or a runner, or if you want to be like a running
Yeah.
coach, or if you make jewelry, you make malas, we could do a mala workshop. Really anything. I just wanted them to be able to like, put their word out there. I feel like people have something to say, but they don't have an audience. So I want to create that audience for them.
I think that's so huge, and that's really, I mean, a few different things that I think is so positive about that. One is the fact that, you know, even you're a yoga teacher, I'm a yoga teacher, we're very different yoga teachers, right? Like I might theme all my classes around Ayurveda, and it's like very, very much about that. And you might always be talking about different mantras, and mantras might be a really important part of your classes. And so I also love that it's in some ways helping to reduce the whatever, making us not commodities, because in many ways right now yoga is a little bit of a commodity of like, well, I can get it for $20, you know, at this gym, or $30 at this place, and so which one do I want to go to, rather than saying, oh, this teacher I really connect with, so it's $10 more a class, but that's who I want to study with, or this teacher I really love is at the $20 class place, so I'm going to go there, even though, you know, people might say it's not as great of a studio or whatever else it is. So I think that's a really huge piece of it. And that reminder that kind of, you know, even though, like, quote unquote, there's a lot of competition, which I totally hear you. And on the other hand, there's like not competition, because it's like totally different people. I think about a class that I was placed in when I was teaching at a new studio here in DC. And I was teaching a power vinyasa class, and I replaced this woman who, like, from everything I've heard from, like, students, was, like, a real hard ass, like, a really, like, strong, strong, like, yell at you kind of teacher. Not yell in, like, a bad way, but just, like, a very strong, strong, strong person. And, like, that's not me. Like, if you don't want to get your thigh parallel to the floor, like, for whatever reason, I don't care. Like, great. Don't do that. Right. Like, yeah. I trust a student way more than I trust me. And it was so funny. So, like, as you know, my numbers are going down in this class, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, well, am I a bad teacher? What is this? It's like, no, it's just, even though it's the same time slot, it is now a completely different class than it used to be. And so the people that used to come to this class don't come to it anymore. Like, it's just, of course not. And so, remembering that that yoga isn't a commodity, because it's really very personal to the teacher or the style or the type of class that it is.
It is, absolutely. And during, we actually had one of our events last night, the kickoff event, and it was amazing. We had Meghna Paula give a discussion, and she actually touched base on that. She said,
I know her, right?
Oh, you know her?
Yeah, I met her when she used to live here in DC.
Oh,
that's so funny.
That is funny. Okay. That's when I knew of her. And then we were connected recently here in New York City.
So funny. But anyway, yes. What did she say?
Yeah, Meghna was telling people. So our goal is like really to reach out to people who are afraid to get into the studio. And I'll touch more on that in a bit. But she said, she was like, okay, so what do I suggest for you if you want to take up a yoga practice, find a teacher you like. It has nothing to do with what gym you go to. Do some research, try some classes, find a teacher you like. And if you can afford it, take private lessons, because they're going to be the ones teaching you what you really want or need to know and what your body needs to know. Mm-hmm. And that says a lot about it being personal. You know, make it personal. Don't make it a gym. Well, you can make it a gym class. Yeah. Sometimes it's a fantastic workout. Like, if that's what you want to do, then yeah. But if you're looking for a yoga practice, find a teacher you like or a place you like, and then stick with that to strengthen your own practice, because it's a very personal thing.
And it is. And it's amazing. You know, you learn very different things from different teachers. And I do think that there's a power in kind of hanging around with a couple of teachers for a time. And this is something like I didn't even put into my head until now, but like definitely, you know, I had a very distinct things that I was learning at Laughing Lotus. And then when I was down in Chapel Hill, my teacher there at Franklin Street Yoga, that's where I did my 200-hour training. Like I learned, you know, I still see things in my yoga teaching and in my current practice that I know are all Lori. And then I see things that I know are all Mary Dana. And I see things that I know are all, you know what I mean? Whoever they are. And it's true, but if I only popped into Mary Dana's class once, yeah, you know, I learned something, but not in that same depth. And it was because I like taking her classes that it works and that I learned something, because you also don't learn things from people you don't really like, which is also a piece that I think is interesting.
Yeah, it's true. I have the same, like I have a bad habit, not a bad habit. I have a habit of, if I really, really like a class, it could be for any reason, I'll keep going in that class. But then the moment I like switch it up and visit another teacher, I'm like, that was amazing. Like I needed that, you know? So it's definitely really good to like find different styles and incorporate them and, you know, try different teachers and stay with a little network of like teachers who offer different things, because you're going to be a little bit unbalanced if you keep doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, completely. Oh yeah. And same deal. Cause also at Franklin Street, it was very power based, even though it wasn't technically a Baptiste studio. That's who my teacher had trained with. And so in teacher training, like the first thing we learned was Journey into Power. And I actually really fell in love with Journey into Power and did that sequence pretty consistently for a year or two. And then I was like, one day, I think it was because I actually went up to New York City and went to Laughing Lotus or something, or I did an online class. And I was like, I miss Half Moon. I haven't done Ardha Chandrasana in like a year. And this feels weird. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, wait, what about all these other poses that I completely forgot about? Right. Like, I like these poses. And so, yeah, like, and every teacher and every place is going to have their little blind spots, their things that they're not doing. So, I think that's really beautiful. And I also want to, I also completely hear you in terms of the difficulty and the time it takes to do full-time yoga and actually like make it work. I think when I moved to DC about 6 or 8 months after finishing my teacher training, and moved to DC with like the idea of like, I'm going to be a full-time yoga teacher now. And it took me, I think, exactly six months to get a class on a schedule, like not subbing, like my studio class. Like it took 6 full months to get there. No, from knowing like no one. So I was really going in blind, but still, I think you're right that that's not always talked about. And it does take time. And also, you know, it helped because I had some other skills from the nutrition side that I was able to supplement income and make it work and be kind of a separate brand than just I only teach yoga. And that's the only thing that's allowed this to like really exist and really work. And so I think that's another piece that's not talked about of like, it's a lot easier if you also have kind of like a side thing that helps flow into the yoga or doesn't get in the way of like, I mean, completely, if you have an investment banking job, oh my God, I mean, could you teach any class except for like a 7:45 PM class during the week? Like, it would be really hard to work that into your schedule.
It's funny. I remember the first class that I taught. Laughing Lotus does a really good job of like setting you up with opportunities. After you graduate, you can teach their community class at 2:30 every day. You can't teach it every day. Probably you have to sign up for a slot, but it happens every day. So I was like, great. And the first one I went to, I was like, it's cool. I'll take a late lunch. I'll whiz on by and teach a class and then come back. And, you know, this will probably like, I can keep this up for a little bit. It'll be fine. It was so not fine. Aside from it being really challenging to find somewhere to teach, it's really challenging to put together a class that you want to be, you know, thoughtful and mindful and help people. And it's not just like, oh, do the same thing every single time and the same poses, asana. You want to make it special to them. You want to like have music that complements what you're doing. You want there to be a purpose and a reason. If you're doing heart openers, then you want that to be consistent throughout the class and you want it to flow and make sense. And that's really where I struggled to like find the time to do that and go teach a class and leaving work, running into yoga class and then trying to run back so that I wasn't gone from work for too long because, you know, I couldn't teach a class at 8 p.m., especially when, you know, like I've been working all day and my brain was kind of, you know, blah.
Oh, yeah. And if other people are interested more in this topic on Yoga Land, do you ever listen to that podcast?
No, I haven't heard of it.
It's cool. It's Jason Crandall. Well, it's actually his wife, Andrea Ferretti. She's was a editor for Yoga Journal for a long time. And then her husband is Jason Crandall, so he's a pretty famous yoga instructor. And so he's on the podcast quite often, and they recently had one about full-time and part-time yoga teaching and kind of some of the difficulties for both sides and how there's no right way to do it, but talking about some of these issues that come up for either side. So I think it's a really interesting topic.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I quite enjoy it, especially if you're like interested in the art of teaching. I very recently discovered it and I kind of wish I've had it for years because I think it would have satisfied a lot of like need to talk about yoga with people. So it would have really helped. Oh, so Greenwell, NYC.
Yeah.
So then, you do these events, like what feels like the end goal? Like out of these events, what happens for members of the New York City fitness community? What happens for you in your world? Like
Yeah, so
where do you see?
I mentioned this a little bit before, but a big part of the reason that I wanted to do this, aside from, like showcasing and highlighting the teachers and the entrepreneurs in the city or around this area, is that I recognize that, like, if you've never done yoga or if you've never gone running, then like you might not be inclined to go to a class at a big yoga studio because it's scary and you don't know what your body will do and you've never done it. Or if you go, you'll like sit at the back of the class and you'll be, shy and timid and not really push your body to the places where it could go. Not push, but put your body in the places that it could go. And I was like, okay, well, what if we make it more intimate and welcoming? And what if we say that everyone, not say, but like we suggest that like new people come if you want to learn yoga, if you want to learn how to run, this is for beginners. And we're going to introduce this to you and like show you a way that you could start on your own, or you could join one of these great people who are teachers or, other people who practice. And so my main goal really is to sustain some sort of, free. Our workshops will probably find a way to monetize them at some point because I would like to, like make the move from investment banking to teaching yoga. So we want to do some workshops, but other than that, I would love for the classes and the discussions and the lectures to stay free and just like have that community. A big part of it is also our book club. We're doing a wellness book club. Yeah.
So cool.
That's I'm probably like most excited about that because I spend all my time reading these books and I didn't really notice it, but like I'll get the urge to like someone will tell me about something and it'll remind me about this book, whether it's like, healing mantras, for instance, and then I start talking about it. And if they're just genuinely not interested, they kind of get that look on their face like, oh my God, like what is this girl talking about? Can you please stop? You're boring us. But I wanted to create a community of people who are interested in that stuff so that if you are too, and if you like to read those books, then you have somebody to talk to about it, you know?
I think that's so beautiful, and especially as someone that, as much as I want to go to yoga and then sit around and chat with everyone for 20 minutes, like I usually have somewhere else I have to go. Like if I've taken, ultimately an hour and 45 minutes out of my day to like go to yoga, do yoga, and get back to wherever I have to be, like I usually don't have extra time to like hang out and chat for that much longer. And so I love the idea of taking that yoga space and like the class space into another way of having that discussion, another way of connecting, because it's true. Like I was thinking about this the other day, and I think about it often. I'm like, the yoga people, like they're the best people. Like no hate on anyone else, but when I hang out with yoga friends or people that I've met through the yoga world, phones don't really come out during the conversation. We tend to get pretty deep. And it's really nice, and it feels like a very soulful conversation, which just doesn't ha always happen all the time. And that doesn't mean that like not yoga people aren't awesome, but there's a lovely mindfulness to the interactions, and that's really wonderful to nurture that, because that's another piece I think that can sometimes get hard with yoga, because people have their lives and they've just spent a lot of time somewhere doing something and they need to go. And so I love the idea of anything that's able to really take the people that are in class that are probably amazing people and brings it to like a wellness book club. That's so
Right,
beautiful.
and I actually found that, in like talking about that kind of stuff and really enjoying like that's the kind of stuff that I like to talk about is like health and wellness and spirituality. I just, that's how I relate to people. And I found that I was, kind of biting my tongue when I didn't know if I was around people who would respond well to it because people can be judgmental or they just don't. If it could be scary if you don't know what it is. Like I'm not going to bring something like the chakras up in a conversation with just anyone on the street, because they might look at me like I'm, you know, like a psychic or a witch, like who hangs out in this little shop saying like, come in, my pretty, let me read your horoscope. Like, no,
yeah.
But it's not healthy to, you know, not talk and I bite, not like, not speak and use your words and bite your tongue. So I just found myself doing that a lot because I was afraid of either being judged or them not being able to relate to me and not making a connection with people. So it was like a book club. Then I know
awesome.
Everyone kind of like, you know, can talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like they want to be there. They obviously want to be there.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate also the same, the other piece that you mentioned, which is making room for more beginners and basics. I recently actually started hosting my own yoga basics class on Saturday mornings because I was like, I feel like there's not enough of it. And I just realized, I was like, if I really care about yoga, I should really care about helping people that don't do it to start doing it versus, you know, most of the classes I teach are pretty high powered vinyasa classes that, you know, a beginner would do fine in, but might not feel all that welcome in. And it was fascinating because the feedback that I got after those first couple of classes is they're like, thank you for actually doing a basics class, because a lot of the basics classes in this area aren't really basics. Like a lot of the basics classes are still pretty intense physically. And just because of, I live in Arlington, Virginia, and it's very, there's just a very active population and it's a pretty high intensity population. And so a lot of the beginners classes are not really beginner. And so I like 100% anything that kind of drops some of those walls and says, hey, just like come, like even if you're not ready to go into a class yet, like here, come hear about yoga so you can decide if like maybe you might be ready for it this way or that way or another way. I don't know. Is the basics scene like that in New York City too?
You know, to be completely honest with you, I don't think I've ever taken a basics class, but
fascinating. Yeah.
Well, no, I'd never taken a basics class in New York City. I have in DC when I was back in DC and
yeah,
it was scary and I didn't know what I was doing. And it's kind of like I was describing where it's like, if I had been like a little bit more shy and a little bit more timid, I probably would never have gone back, you know, like,
so true. Yeah.
And I was, that's actually one of the things I want to do with Greenwell NYC is, have one of the workshops be like either a weekly or a bi-weekly basics class, like
that'd be amazing.
Actual basics, mm-hmm. Not, you know,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
Teach people what a downward dog is and how you should do it. Like really go back to the basics with it. And I think that way, if someone tries yoga, they won't necessarily be so scared and they'll keep coming back. And that's, to me, that's important. And I think it's important for other people.
Completely. Where did you practice when you lived in DC? Just curious.
So there was this, I started doing Bikram and I didn't love it.
Yeah.
there's this place in Bethesda. I can't remember what it was called.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I was doing Bikram at a place in Bethesda. And then I started going to Core Power Yoga in Bethesda.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of like, you know, I didn't have a ton of money. I was just going to wherever the classes, like you said, like which class,
of course, wherever they were cheapest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like if somebody's offering a free class, I'll go to that. And I would go to like Down Dog and is the Shala there? Is that here? It's ringing a bell.
Oh, there is a Yoga Shala, but it's like very new. I don't know when the last time you lived in DC was, but
yeah, it was 3 years ago. That's probably, yeah, I'm talking about that's here. Something like that. There was a few places that I jumped around. Again, like,
yeah.
I didn't have a favorite teacher. I didn't really – it wasn't until I moved to New York City that I really found, like, a studio that I liked and teachers that I liked and, you know,
yeah.
Kind of stuck with it and devoted more time and effort to it.
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely. That is amazing. Oh, my gosh. We talked so many about so many good things.
I know.
It's so good. So let's see, is there anything else I need to say? Is there anything else you want to say about Greenwell NYC or anything that's like just really important to you about the company and about how you're doing it? Anything you want to throw out there about that?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that even though like the events and workshops and everything will obviously be in New York City, our book club is online
Oh my God, wait, you could have said that like 20 minutes ago, girl.
I know. So it's going to be kind of like both. Like we're going to do a book club reading, but we're going to make it accessible for like people to join in. There's going to be an online forum for them to kind of, you know, like comment, take notes on while they're reading it. Or, and then like, if you have friends who are also interested, like by all means, like we'll provide questions and you can like have a night with your friends, but there will be an online presence for the book clubs. So I just wanted to put that out there because I know you're in DC.
Yes, thank you so much. Because yes, okay, great, good. Because I love reading. I have a lot of these books, and I love to talk about them as well. Because there's just so many. There's so many good, wonderful things to learn. So many good things to learn. Okay, so then I think my last question for you then will be, you know, we kind of mentioned mantra and mala. We mentioned obviously you do yoga. Is there anything else that really sticks out for you that's like a really important practice for you to help you find balance in your world? Is there anything that's like just really huge for you, your physical health or your mental health? You know, like to give a simple example for me, like having time in the morning where that's like quiet and like some meditation time, but even just like eating a good breakfast, like at home alone in quiet, or with my husband, but like, you know, in relative alone-y quiet, like is really important for me to have a fabulous day. Is there anything like that for you that comes to mind?
Yes, actually. And it's kind of more recent because I did like spend a really long time like attending to the mind but neglecting my body, not like in such a way that I wasn't exercising or overeating in that aspect. I think I was like kind of like pushing myself with like physical fitness and stuff, but when it came to actually nourishing my body and like taking care of it and, you know, like spending time with myself, I actually recently started like a morning practice similar to yours, and I'm doing Claudia Welsh's training online.
Cool. I didn't know she had an online training. That's cool.
Yeah, and she kind of introduced the daily routine and more importantly the morning routine to me, and kind of explained how like waking up early, I'm not a grounded, by nature I'm not very grounded. I kind of live in my head and have a lot of vata. And
yeah, I was gonna ask, are you just super vata?
Okay. Yeah, especially like during the vata season, you know, I get all out of balance.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she kind of explained that like waking up in the morning before dawn, you're kind of like transitioning into the different times of the day. So you're like being born again when the sun comes up. And then if you don't nourish yourself in that very important moment, and maybe like, you know, like take some time, sit, meditate, you can, you know, do like, I've been using sesame oil. Sometimes I use coconut oil if I have like a flare up, but, you know, just like taking care of my body and like meditating in the morning. And it's hard because I'm not a morning person, but doing that has really been so wonderful for me. And like, just like noticing myself and spending time with myself and my body and like grounding myself lately for the past like 2 months has really been like a game changer. So that is most likely going to stick.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, that's like the number one when I'm talking with people that are working on balancing vata, like the number one, I always say like the hallmark of vata, like all you need to do is anchor and find anchors in your day. And like the morning one is, I think, such a huge one. And I really love that. Okay, I'm gonna ask you one question about the waking up before dawn thing, because this comes up in Ayurveda, and obviously Claudia Welch is talking about it too. Mm-hmm. So my problem is I actually can get up like with the sunrise, and it's a beautiful thing because if I'm getting to bed early enough, I don't need an alarm clock and I'll just wake up with the sunrise. And I'm kind of like, I don't want to wake up before sunrise because to do that, I'm going to have to use an alarm. Does she mention anything about this, or does like sunrise time count?
She does. And you know, I haven't, it's not like a foolproof kind of solution, because I really struggle with it still. And her advice, which really kind of like spoke to me, was that when you're going through that, first of all, yes, go to bed early. I have that problem. That's probably why I have such a hard time. My mind goes a million miles per hour at night, and I can stay up until like 2-3 a.m. if I'm in that creative mood. But
oh my gosh,
her thing was that if you love what you're doing or you have a sense of love, then you will, it'll be easier. Like, you'll be more inspired. And the way I think about it is like, if I have work in the morning or like, you know, like going to like the corporate office or whatever, it's really hard to get up. But if I have something that I'm actually looking forward to because I'm doing it out of love, like a love for myself or love for somebody else, it's a lot easier. Like I noticed that like, if I have a really early morning flight, say it's like I have a 6 a.m. flight somewhere, but it's like I'm going on a trip or a vacation or something, I'm super excited. I will wake up before my alarm goes off. It'll be like the sun isn't even like cracking, you know, like it's so easy. And I was like, okay, like I need to shift my mindset to like kind of actually like acknowledge and accept that like what I'm doing is helping me and I love it. Like, so that was her advice. I know it's not really like a tool, but it kind of sat with me, you know, like it is kind of a shift. Cause I never really thought about it that way. I was like, okay, I'm getting up and I'm gonna take care of myself. But I didn't think like, I love doing this and I love doing it for me. And I'm excited, you know, I'm excited to get up and spend time with myself.
That is so wonderful. And I think I actually, no, that's completely landing. Thich Nhat Hanh has this like little like morning thing, prayer or blessing, I don't know what you want to call it, but that he always says is if, like, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you know, before you open your eyes, you say, you know, waking up in the morning, I smile 24 hours, a whole new 24 hours in front of me. I'm paraphrasing here, like, let me be present and giving in these next 24 hours is essentially the, like, this little thing. And I love it. But like, for example, this morning I was lying there and I said it ironically to myself. I was like, 24 hours. Like, you're so right. Like you, like, I think that's actually a really huge piece. And it is really easy, you know, especially as you kind of accumulate wellness practices, it can be really easy to be like, okay, here's another like checklist of stuff I have to do. And this is where my pitta comes out, where it becomes a checklist of, well, I need to get up and meditate and I need to do this and I have to do that and I have to do that. And it's like, well, no, actually, like, I'm very lucky to get up and have this time to meditate this morning. And I love to do it. And it makes me feel good. And, you know, and all of these pieces. So,
yeah. And the great thing, go ahead. Advice.
No, you're doing it.
I was going to say, the great thing about the way Claudia explains it is that even though the way I look at it is like what I'm doing to get up this early is something that I love, she explains it in a way that, like, you don't necessarily, the love doesn't have to be for that. But if you have a heart and a mind full of love, you'll have an easier time. It could just be like, you know, falling asleep with like, and like knowing there's a book that you love that you're going to read at some point the next day, just something that you love that will inspire you to do better. It actually, she says it makes your brain actually absorb what you're learning more than if you didn't have those feelings, which is crazy to me. I'm not going to get into it because I'm not, you know, a neuroscience, but scientist, but that really,
I
like,
believe her. She's a smart kid.
Wow,
that's so beautiful. Oh my god. Obviously we could talk forever, Amanda, since we're talking. I even said that we were going to, so thank you for giving me some extra time. Please tell us where everyone can find you in the great world wide web.
So right now, we just actually launched an Instagram. It's Greenwell. It's spelled just like it said, GreenwellNYC. And then the website, which is set to launch soon because we just got everyone's kind of like votes in for the books that we should be doing for our book club launch. And that's
awesome.
Yeah, that's greenwell.nyc. So that'll
love
be
it.
Going up this weekend. And then my other Instagram, which is the blog, you can actually find that on the Greenwell NYC Instagram page. And I just post a few things about malas, mantras, and crystals on there. So if anyone's interested in like learning more about that or hearing kind of like what I do in my own practice, that's a place where you can find that info.
Awesome. I appreciate that. And can we get like a little advance notice on what the, do you know what the book is going to be for the first book club weekend?
I don't know. We just got them. So at the event last night, everyone kind of like voted, and I have it in a shoebox somewhere. So I just need to tally it up. But we had just a few options. But I will let you know if you want to share that somewhere. Absolutely.
I really will. Yes. I was just looking for, you know, like the exclusive break, because that would have been exciting. But
sorry, I should have thought about that before.
No worries. It's more because I'm just so curious, and I'd be like, great, another book to put on my list. It'll be fabulous.
Yeah, you might have already read it. You never know.
Who knows? I don't. It's almost better because it's always good for me to reread, especially because sometimes I end up skimming because I just have so many books on my list.
Yeah.
So I always appreciate a good reread because it helps you remember it all that much more.
I take away something new every time.
Yeah, seriously. Thank you so much, Amanda. Such a beautiful conversation. I appreciate you sharing so much like knowledge and wellness and information with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. This was great.
Awesome. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Bye.